The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Kara Medoff-Barnett, Executive Director of American Ballet Theatre, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving, on AM 970 The Answer in New York City.
It is said that ballet is a dance executed by the human soul, and that ballet dancers are among the greatest living athletes. American Ballet Theatre, located here in New York, is considered to be one of the great dance companies in the world. And in 2006, by an act of Congress, it became America's national ballet company. And it's a great pleasure to have with us their executive director, Kara Medoff-Barnett. Good evening, Kara, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Thank you, Denver. Thrilled to be here.
ABT was founded back in 1939. That's almost 80 years ago. Share with us a little bit of the history of American Ballet Theatre.
Absolutely. Well, it's an honor to serve this organization as we approach our 80th birthday. I've only been with the organization for 2 years, but I've admired it ever since I was a little girl coming to see the ballet with my mother. I grew up in North Carolina and always admired ABT, had posters of American Ballet Theatre dancers on my walls. So it really is a thrill to now be part of this organization. The company, as you mentioned, was organized in 1939, had its first public performance in January of 1940. Founded by a woman, or formidable female leader named Lucia Chase, the company was founded to really bring together talent from around the world and to form this American company that had an eclectic repertoire that preserved the classics of the art form, but also that worked with the greatest living creators, with incredible choreographers and designers and composers, and brought them together to extend the art form of classical ballet. And so we continue in that tradition today, and our mission is not only to preserve the great classics of the past, but to extend the canon of classical dance.
Mm-hmm. And why don't you inspire us, Kara, and give us some appreciation of ballet? I mean, the essence of the art form, the form of communication, the dancers themselves.
Well, I think ballet is a primal form of communication. Uh-huh. It is the movement of human bodies through space, and American Ballet Theatre does that in a unique way because of the theater part of our name. Mm-hmm. Dancers join American Ballet Theatre because they want to tell stories. Sometimes those stories are clear narratives, whether it's Romeo and Juliet or Swan Lake. Sometimes they're more abstract, but the dancers embody characters, embody feelings, embody relationships. And I've always enjoyed in watching American Ballet Theatre how you get to know these individuals, how you come to see how they approach the art and the art form and the storytelling as actors. And our dancers really pride themselves on their acting. And I think that the theater part of our name really sets us apart. I also think that the athleticism of the dancers is something that inspires broad audiences. I know that my husband, who's a former athlete, always remarks to me after he goes to the ballet, wow, what they can do with their bodies. Yeah. And how they can control their bodies, how they can make it look so easy and effortless. Maybe the energy expended is similar to what a pro athlete might expend in a soccer match or a basketball game, but they're allowed to sweat. They're allowed to put their hands on their knees and take a breather. These dancers are out there embodying these characters, telling these stories, and making it all look graceful and effortless. So I am consistently inspired by the storytelling and the artistry, but I'm also inspired by the athleticism and the sheer strength and strength paired with grace of the ballet dancers in American Ballet Theatre.
Yeah, I think you've even said that the product you bring the public every day is perfection, right?
Well, I think that we strive for perfection. Yeah. And that certainly is, I think, the aspiration. I think that dancers in general are perfectionists, but they also realize that perfection is elusive. And that's why mm-hmm. they show up every morning and start their day with the ritual of ballet class. They are always striving to be better, to be stronger, to perfect their technique, to extend what's possible for them in their bodies and working together as a cohesive whole, as a team, to elevate this art form that we all revere, but that we all want people to enjoy. And so how do you strive for – perhaps you strive almost beyond perfection because perfection is too safe. I think that we're striving for an ideal, striving for a feeling, striving for that elusive, transcendent joy that we have the great privilege of experiencing in the theater many times a year and sometimes even many times a week when you have the opportunity to experience what it is that this company does, what it is that ABT brings to life on stage when the lights go down and the curtain rises.
Speaking of enjoy, do you have a favorite ballet?
Well, you're not supposed to have a favorite when you're the executive director. I think it's kind of like having a favorite child when you're a mother. But I will say that Romeo and Juliet brings me to tears every single time I see it. And I came to ballet after a career in the theater. I produced Broadway and off-Broadway theater, and I've seen a lot of Romeo and Juliet. Many live theater, on screen. There is nothing like the ballet Romeo and Juliet.
Gets
Kenneth
every
McMillan's
time.
With the Prokofiev score, and to see these different dancers inhabit the roles, and not only to inhabit the roles of Romeo and Juliet, but of Lady Capulet and of Tybalt and of Paris and of Mercutio. Mm-hmm. Each time I see it, the chemistry is different. What the dancers bring to the drama is different, and it always moves me. So I have to say Romeo and Juliet.
But you're not allowed to say Romeo and Juliet.
And then I'll tell you 12 close second places.
Okay. Well, what is the current state of ballet in 2018? It always seemed that it had a golden period with Brezhnikov back in the 60s, 70s, whenever that was, and sort of fell out of favor. But there seems to be a bit of a resurgence. Now, that's just my assessment, which isn't very good. What is your assessment?
My assessment is that it's more than a resurgence. I think that ballet is hot right now. I think that ballet is exciting for our audiences, and we're attracting a younger and more diverse audience than ever before. I think that part of that is because ballet looks great on a small screen. And so the power of social media, the power of video is working in our favor. It is not working in the favor of every classical art form. Mm-hmm. I think that theater, opera, classical music, it's hard to capture those art forms in a short form way on a small screen that makes the viewer say, I've got to go see that. I have to experience that. You can watch 6 seconds of ballet or 6 minutes of ballet or 30 seconds of a dancer leaping or spinning or balancing.
And you're hooked.
On your phone, and you're hooked. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have a very powerful tool, and we are only scratching the surface of how best to use it to attract and inspire and spark the curiosity of new audiences for this art form.
You know, you went to Duke planning to follow in your dad's footsteps and become a doctor. So you're taking pre-med and you're working on the emergency response vehicle. How in the world did that ride on the ambulance ultimately take you all the way to New York and becoming the executive director of American Ballet Theatre?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think that the common thread is the adrenaline. Whether you're on an ambulance or you're backstage at the Met, there's a lot happening all at once. And someone's got to coordinate that activity. So I think there are some similarities. But I did think that I wanted to be a doctor. And what attracted me about practicing medicine was caring for others and taking care of other human beings. And I think that I have certainly shifted from taking care of their bodies to hopefully tending to the human spirit by sustaining this art form and by bringing it to the lives of our not only our dancers and our artists, our staff members, our students in our school, and our audiences in New York and around the world. I think that when I stopped, when I came home one vacation and told my parents that instead of being a doctor, I was going to be a theater producer, that shift for me was that I didn't want to spend the next several years in the lab. Mm-hmm. I really craved interaction with other human beings. And when I discovered that there were roles in the arts where I could use my talents and skills, which certainly were not on the stage but were behind the scenes, in a way that could build community and could create an environment in which artists could thrive, that to me became tremendously exciting and I think became a calling.
Yeah, yeah. And your folks were cool with that decision to boot.
My folks were amazing. Yeah. They were supportive. I think they were stunned and astonished and ultimately believed that I could do whatever I set my mind to doing. And I think part of that was because I had trained as a dancer as a kid and they had seen the fierce determination and discipline that I had developed in the studio. And they knew that if I set my mind to something that I would pursue it all in. And so they continued to put LSAT books and GMAT books on my bed when I would visit my home in North Carolina, but they also really loved coming up to New York for the opening night.
Yeah, I bet. Well, the artistic director of ABT is Kevin McKenzie, and he's held that post, I think, since 1992. Tell us a little bit about him and the relationship between an artistic director and an executive director in a performing arts organization.
Sure. Well, I feel very blessed to have Kevin McKenzie as a partner, as a guru, as I learn the intricacies and the history and the legacy of this company and this art form. I think it was perhaps a bit intimidating when I realized that I would be coming into an organization not only that had 75 years of history and legacy, but an artistic director who had almost 25 years as the artistic leader, and before that had been a principal dancer with the company. Here was someone who knew so much more about ballet than I did. And Kevin has been, from day one, patient, has been kind, has been welcoming, has been supportive, and I think is one of the most entrepreneurial leaders you'll ever meet. When I frame an idea and say, Kevin, this might be crazy, but how about, he says, tell me 10 good reasons why not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm deeply grateful for the sense of possibility that he brings to every conversation, to every decision, and also to the community that he's created at ABT. This is a company that's had its ups and downs over the decades, that has, by force of sheer will, survived many of the tumultuous periods in its history. And Kevin has been a steady center and has been a source of strength for the artistic enterprise. And the dancers adore him.
Mm.
He has truly built so many careers and has also built a sense of pride and camaraderie and kindness and mutual respect in the artistic organization at ABT. It's something I've never experienced in my entire career in the performing arts. Kevin has created a remarkable community.
You also have an artist in residence, don't you? Tell us about him and the role that he plays in the company.
Sure. So Alexei Ratmansky is our artist in residence,
mm-hmm.
and he is a genius. The MacArthur Foundation said that, so I can say it too. But it's extraordinary to have someone like Alexei in our midst, creating new work on our dancers with our team. And he is just he's an engine. He pushes us to think boldly, to plan ambitiously, and he really brings out of the dancers things that no one thought was possible, whether he's asking them to inhabit a more refined style of the turn of the century when he recreates something like Petipa's Sleeping Beauty,
mm-hmm.
or more recently Petipa's Harlequinade, which he did for us this spring season. When he does that, he is studying the master and unpacking the notes of Petipa and really asking the dancers to go back into another time. He takes the artists and the audiences into a time capsule. And then he uses that knowledge that he gains from studying the master to create some of the most exciting and extraordinary works of art that I've ever witnessed. So Whipped Cream, which is a ballet he created for us last year, is set to a Richard Strauss score from the 20s. But the movement vocabulary and the sense of humor very much 2017. It's whimsical and it's fanciful and it's fun and it's hard. The dancers are being asked to do things and fit more movements into a phrase of music than anyone thinks is humanly possible. But Alexei thinks it's possible, and therefore it must be so. And he brings to the table just brilliant collaborators like Mark Ryden, the pop surrealist artist who created the sets and costumes for Whipped Cream. And Alexei says, this is the guy. He's going to create this magical world where sweets come to life. And that's what happened. And all of a sudden, we have dancers entering by slide, dancers in white unitards who become the whipped cream of the title because they're spinning like an electric mixer, just whisking up the cream, and they're entering by slide. It's hilarious. It's brilliant. It's transporting, and it all comes out of the brilliant mind of Alexei Ritmansky.
And it's playing this coming week, by the way, and that will be the close of your spring season. But you've just announced your fall season. So tell us about that, what's in store, and also where do you perform?
Sure. So the fall season for ABT is where we have even more space to extend the canon. So we are doing several world premieres this fall. We do 2 weeks at the David Koch Theater at Lincoln Center in October. We open on October 17th. And this fall, we're focusing on female creators and women choreographers as part of the ABT Women's Movement. So ABT, as I mentioned earlier, founded by a woman, founded by Lucia Chase. Agnes DeMille had a piece on our very first program in 1940. Twyla Tharpe has created many of her great pieces for ABT. So we've certainly had powerful and brilliant women creating for ABT over the decades. But in recent years, Kevin McKenzie has decided to focus on supporting and advancing and propelling the opportunities for women choreographers. So this fall, we will have a world premiere by Michelle Dorrance, the tap dancer and choreographer who created her first piece for ABT this spring at the Met. We will have a new piece by Jessica Lang, who's been working with ABT on and off for 20 years. And she will collaborate with Sarah Crowner, an incredible visual artist based in Brooklyn. And we will also bring back some favorites by Twyla Tharpe. We will put on the stage at the Koch Theater a piece that Lauren Lovett created for the ABT Studio Company. And in addition, we'll celebrate Jerome Robbins with Fancy Free and other dances. So we'll have some old favorites mixed with some cutting-edge, exciting new work. And I am just, while we have 2 weeks left in our spring season, I am counting down the days till October so that I can see all of these new works come to life on the ABT dancers. It's 2 weeks of intense fun and energy and vibrancy and eclecticism in the spirit of how this company was founded, to have a vibrant and diverse repertoire and work with the most talented creators of our time who are working in dance. So
it sounds like a wonderful blend. You have a couple other programs there, and I want to talk about those. One, in your effort to increase diversity and inclusion, you launched something called Project Plié maybe about 5 years ago. How do you go about this, and how successful has it been, Kara?
So Project Plié is our initiative to expand ethnic and racial diversity and representation in classical ballet. And this was started under my predecessor, and it's something that I am deeply committed to and that the entire organization is committed to. And we certainly focus on the talent pipeline in our school, in our summer programs, in our training programs, because we want to see diversity on the stage. We also are focused on diversity behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And that's an area where I've been working closely with colleagues and drawing on the learnings of experts to figure out how we can also expand diversity in our administrative staff, in our internship programs, in our board of directors, in our leadership.
That's always so key.
And also in our audiences. Mm-hmm. How can we think about this holistically so that we not only are supporting ballet teachers working in communities of color and not only so that we can support and advance the careers of dancers of color, but how can we also make it possible for individuals from underrepresented communities to pursue careers in this art form and in the performing arts in many of the different jobs and roles and leadership positions that we have available. So we are actively propelling Project Plié and also thinking about what's next. How do we build on the early success of Project Plié, which now has us in over 40 cities working with boys and girls clubs and introducing the magic of ballet.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? What's Project Plié 2.0
mm-hmm.
so that we can really make this a 360-degree approach to diversity and inclusion? It's incumbent on us as America's National Ballet Company to find ways to reflect America and American diversity and American dynamism.
Absolutely. And I also saw a couple weeks ago you announced a new choreography initiative called ABT Incubator. How is that going to work?
Well, this is tremendously exciting. It's all about extending the canon. It's all about finding new creative talent from within and also identifying choreographers who maybe haven't yet had the opportunity to work with American Ballet Theatre dancers. So this is propelled by David Hallberg, one
mm-hmm.
of our
right.
principal dancers. And the idea is a workshop, a very private but intense opportunity for ABT dancers to try their hand at choreography. And David and Kevin McKenzie will also be inviting in one or two choreographers from the outside to work with the ABT dancers. It'll be a two-week workshop in late October, early November. And we want to bring new movement vocabularies, to bring new choreographic ideas into the ABT ecosystem
mm-hmm.
and see what percolates,
That's
see
absolutely.
What emerges.
What happens?
So we're not making any predictions. We are just saying, let's put talented people in a room, talented dancers, talented choreographers, and see what happens. And I think that there are many different paths that the pieces created could take. We are committed to doing this every year and to growing the program in the future.
Very cool initiative. You know, like so many nonprofit organizations, Kara, so much time and money and effort is dedicated to the service or the product or, in your case, the performance. Everything goes on the stage. And when that happens, sometimes the infrastructure or the scaffolding that helps support all that work goes a little neglected. And I know that's a bit of the situation you found when you came to ABT. What are some of the steps you're taking to sort of strengthen and revitalize that infrastructure?
Sure. So ABT is an organization that is almost 80 years old, and it is remarkable that the artistry on the stage, when that curtain rises, it is
magical.
Glory.
Mm-hmm.
It is glorious. It is magical. And as you mentioned, there's perhaps some deferred maintenance behind the scenes on that scaffolding, even while we continue to support that magic on the stage. And so I have been committed together with Kevin and my colleagues and our board of trustees to strengthening our infrastructure, strengthening our foundations so that we can continue to have that magic when the curtain rises for many generations to come. So we think about infrastructure in several different buckets. One is our physical infrastructure, our home. We've been at 890 Broadway since 1980. And so we have done a few really exciting upgrades to our home.
Sure, the lounge in particular.
The lounge, which you referenced, which we were thrilled to collaborate with Architectural Digest to create a common space, a community gathering space that is really beautiful and inviting and a place where our dancers, our staff, our donors can come together and spend time building community. It is the only gathering space that we have in our home. And so we are thrilled that thanks to Architectural Digest, it now is really an elegant place to be together.
And everything was donated, which is spectacular.
Everything was donated. Mm-hmm. We had an anonymous donor who provided provided some of the basic infrastructure, and then Architectural Digest brought many sponsors to the table who just made it it is the living room that you and I probably wish we had in our homes. But luckily, I now have it at my office at ABT's headquarters.
Which sometimes is your home.
Exactly. My second home. And so one is our place and just being proud of the place that we all go to work every day. Number two is the people and thinking about our staff structure and thinking about our board of trustees and how can we recruit and retain top talent at all levels. Certainly, Kevin is always thinking about recruitment and retention of our artists and our dancers, but how do we make sure that our staff is as excellent, that everyone is A+, top tier, and that we have the right functions in place to be able to deliver on our ambitious goals. Number three is our digital infrastructure. I inherited a website that I think was over a decade old and was not mobily enabled. And if we want to be able to communicate with our fans, with our audiences, with our broad community, our mission is to reach the widest possible audience. In today's day and age, you can't reach the widest possible audience if you have an antique and unreliable website. So we were fortunate to have a website donated by one of our trustees this past year. So if you visit abt.org, it'll work on your mobile phone.
That's
and it actually is quite easy to navigate and to find information.
You just gave it a facelift. As you said, also you have an art form that really sells on your mobile phone.
Absolutely. And so we're thrilled to have a new digital backbone. And now we are investing in video and in building assets to fill that new digital home. We talk about it as a home that now needs furniture. So now we're now we're going to build some of the video furniture that can fill that home and decorate it and make it a place that people want to hang out. And then the financial infrastructure is also an area where I think we have room for improvement, and we've certainly made some major strides in recent years, really investing in new work and investing in ABT's future.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are a fundraiser extraordinaire, which is a great asset to have if you're leading a performing arts organization in New York. Tell us a little bit about that business model and some of your partners and some of your sources of support.
Sure. So I think that the most exciting fundraising initiative and the most meaningful fundraising initiative that we've launched in recent years is called the Ripmansky Project. And so we have raised significant funds from generous donors, including a matching grant, to support new work by our artists in residence and to allow us to plan ahead for a steady, reliable stream of new work from this incredible artist in residence, so that we know that with Alexei, we can plan not just 1 year out, but 2, 3, 4, 5 years out so that we know when we are going to be able to produce and launch new ballets. And so that's been transformative for our financial backbone and also transformative for our artistic planning.
Mm-hmm. You have been the executive director of ABT for a couple of years now. What is the most difficult choice or the most difficult decision you've had to make thus far?
The most difficult decision was in my first month on the job, where I was asked to greenlight the production of Whipped Cream. And this was a dream project for Alexei Ripmansky and for Kevin McKinsey. And it sounded spectacular from the first description. However, we didn't have the funds in place to produce it. And I learned that if we didn't greenlight it immediately, that we would have to wait several years because the creative team would not be available and we wouldn't have the time in our schedule. We have a very robust touring schedule, which we haven't even talked about yet, but we wouldn't have the time in ABT's schedule to produce this work for many years if we didn't greenlight it right away and bring it in the 2017 season. So it was a decision of, should we swing for the fences and put our faith in the new work that was yet to be created, but that we knew who was behind the scenes and have faith in their vision and have faith in our own fundraising potential? Or would we make this the perhaps the more cautious, perhaps more safe decision to say, you know what, let's wait a few years. I've just arrived. I've only been here for a few weeks. Let's get through a year or two first and then take this bold leap. And together with Kevin and together with our board leadership, we said this is what we're here to do. Mm-hmm. We are here to fulfill ABT's mission. And ABT's mission is to preserve, but also to extend. And we have the opportunity to extend the canon of classical ballet with new work by our artist in residence. It is an exciting new ballet, and this is what we should be doing. And so we will commit to finding the resources. We will commit to making this happen. And it turned out to be a bold decision and perhaps a scary decision at the time. But it was ultimately, I think, a decision that was important for my partnership with Kevin, mm-hmm. that was important for our board to see that we had great ambitions and that we had faith in our ability to raise the funds necessary to pursue big ideas and to be out at to have the artistic engine leading the way.
Yeah.
And that we were there to support the artistic vision of our incredible artistic gurus and leading lights.
A wonderful leap of faith you took. Are there challenges in bringing the artistic side and the administrative side of a performing arts organization together? I hear that so often from so many of your colleagues. How do you do it? What have you learned about that?
Well, I think that the more interaction between human beings, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fortunate in that our staff offices and our dance studios are pretty much on top of each other. So you can't avoid the art if you're an administrative staff member, and you can't avoid the administrative staff if you're a dancer.
That's
you
a
trip
plus.
Over them on your way to the bar. So I think that there is a strength in proximity, mm-hmm. and a strength in awareness, but I think that we have to also underscore and foster a sense of community that is coherent and cohesive and goes beyond the silos of artistic and administrative. So one thing that Kevin and I have done over the past few years is introduced all staff convenings. Sometimes that's in the form of a party, and sometimes that's in the form of a meeting.
Yeah.
But opportunities for people to come together, not only dancers and staff, but we invite the orchestra. We invite the crew.
A family.
We invite the teaching faculty, mm-hmm. from our school. And the idea is that we come together and we share our triumphs, we share our challenges. Sometimes we share a happy hour and a cocktail. But the opportunity is there to meet individuals who are engaged in this endeavor, in this really challenging endeavor that we all believe in. Everyone is there because they believe in it. And so I think it's important that the dancer gets to meet the electrician, and that the fundraiser gets to meet the clarinetist. I think that those conversations that we can have informally and formally, when we ask people to report to their peers and their colleagues, that those opportunities for communication across silos are hugely important. ABT as a touring company already has a unique sense of community because we travel around the world together. But only 130 people travel around the world together. Now, I know that sounds big. We're one of the largest
cultural institutions. You are the largest, I believe, yeah.
That regularly tours. But there are individuals on the team who don't travel with the company. And so how can we take that sense of family that you build when you're on the road together and bring that back to our home in New York and have a more expansive sense of family for everyone who is working so hard and so tirelessly to bring the magic of American Ballet Theater to the stage and to sustain this remarkable art form.
Let me pick up on what you said about the world, and let me get you out on this. You were at Lincoln Center before assuming this position at ABT, and your job there was building out the international arm of Lincoln Center. So what's your thinking around ABT and the role that it should play as a cultural ambassador of the United States around the globe, and also your vision for the organization as you head into your centennial 20 years hence?
I was very fortunate at Lincoln Center to start Lincoln Center International and to work with leaders around the world, government leaders, philanthropic leaders, leaders in education who were investing in the future of art and culture in their communities. Now, often they were investing in the hardware. They mm-hmm. were investing in the new opera houses and concert halls and cultural districts, and we had the opportunity to advise them and collaborate with them. Now at ABT, I feel like I've moved from working for the arena to working for the team. And so what we have at American Ballet Theatre is a collection of individuals, of individual artists who together bring the arts and the experience of the arts to life. And the art form that we have the great honor of extending and bringing to the widest possible audience is an art form that doesn't require language, mm-hmm. that is, as I said earlier, a primal form of communication. So we are perfectly positioned to be cultural ambassadors. We have dancers from 27 states and 16 countries in the company right now. So that means that anywhere we go, when we tour around the country and across the world, we have a hometown hero.
Yeah.
We have someone who can speak the local language and talk about what it is that we do. We have individuals who reflect the communities in which we're performing. And so as a magnet for talent and also as a provider of transcendent experiences, of joyful experiences of art that take us out of our daily lives and show us what's possible, that show us the limitlessness, is that a word? of human experience and achievement. We really, when we travel, whether it's to Muscat in Oman, whether it's to Hong Kong and Singapore, where we just were with Whipped Cream and Swan Lake, whether it's to Lincoln, Nebraska, where we had two sold-out shows of Firebird this past spring. In all of these places, I believe, are bringing the best of America and the best of what it means to have a community of talent that works together as a team to bring joy to audiences. And I think that there is something in that that's very powerful, that is, I believe, unique in this world where communication can be challenged at times across borders and boundaries.
Sure.
Even within our own country, there is so much animosity right now. But across political lines, across all sorts of borders and boundaries, the language of ballet and the storytelling and artistry and vibrancy and vitality of American Ballet Theatre brings communities together. When we fill those opera houses and theaters around the world, this team fills those arenas with a sense of possibility and a sense of community that I think is deeply important in our world today and tomorrow.
Well, Kara Madoff-Barnett, the Executive Director of American Ballet Theatre, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Tell us about that new website of yours and Whipped Cream. Now, I know that's playing this week. Is it still possible to get tickets?
If you act quickly, it's a tremendously fun way to spend a couple of hours out of the heat and inside the air conditioning of the Metropolitan Opera House. It is a ballet about a boy who eats too many sweets after his confirmation. He goes with his friends to a pastry shop, eats too many sweets, too much whipped cream, falls ill, and retreats into his dreams where all of the sweets come to life. So you have Princess Praline and you have Prince Coffee, and it is fanciful, it is fun, the dancing is extraordinary, and I do highly recommend it, and it's terrific for people of all ages. So my kids, I have I have three young daughters who adore this ballet, but it might be my husband's favorite ballet too. I think that shows.
And he's allowed to have
chocolate.
One.
He absolutely is, and it really also demonstrates the innovation that we're committed to at American Ballet Theatre of creating new classics. And I think that this truly is one. So don't miss it. It's
absolutely
great fun.
Sounds like a hoot, and act quickly. Well, thank you, Kara. It was a real pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much for having me. Thrilled to be here.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.